Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Thanks for listening to the Primetime with Isaac and Souk. I'm Souk, by the way, podcast brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center, doing the right thing since 1952.
Ah, cute.
If you can find the time to explore the mind of a stripper,
then you can find the time to spend with your actual family.
Primetime with Isaac and Souk.
Damn! What they on? All steroids and no carbs? They're the thick-ass kids.
This is Primetime.
We're not like you. We're grown ups.
Your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Oh, my goodness!
Here are Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanek with Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Woo, back on track. Really fast and furious first hour of NBA talk. That's an upset.
Is that what you call that, fast and furious?
True story.
That seemed more like slow and plodding to me.
It's like the movie. I'm the who's in that movie?
We got Vin Diesel. You got The Rock.
Yeah,
Ludacris.
Paul Walker, R.I.P.
I'm Vin Diesel. You're the dead guy.
I'm Paul Walker.
Yeah.
How am I?
He was good looking.
Yeah, I understand that. But how are you, Vin Diesel? How are you, the big bald guy?
Look at me.
As opposed to the good looking guy with the beard. I think you need to kind of flip those roles.
I only did that because one's still alive.
He doesn't want to be dead.
Yeah.
No, you don't want to be dead.
I'll be The Rock. No, you should be The Rock. We'll give you The Rock.
Vin Diesel and The Rock, huh? All right, the Scandinavian Rock.
Fast and the Furious 27.
Tokyo Drift.
Coming out next week. How many of those things do they have now?
I think there's 6 or 7 of them, and there's another one coming out.
My kid loves those.
That makes sense.
I know. Yeah, and I look at them with...
Those are just great bad movies.
No, Mike.
That's
not
what he said.
They're they
not
are. Great. They're, that's exactly they're great what he said. Bad movies. They're awful movies, but they're really fun.
It's for people under 30. It's one of those things.
Really is.
It's like the Transformer movies, which Mike probably liked too.
No.
We all judge, you know, and we form our opinions based off of stupid things like that.
Sure.
I told my kid, I said, you went down a peg with that take.
That he likes all of the Fast and Furious movies?
Yeah, but I said, it's okay. You've come up many pegs in other areas.
I understand. It's a give and take. It's like a living,
I said, hey,
living, breathing, you know, sort of sliding scale.
That's right.
Yeah.
I said, be better.
You're better than that. You're better than that. Be better than Vin Diesel, all right? You know what? I think we should all have that as a daily mantra, is be better than Vin Diesel.
So a great football play that we should discuss happened over the weekend. Now, you don't see this very much. But North Texas, you don't see North Texas going in and beating Arkansas.
No. A lot of people think that North Texas coach is going to be the next kind of the sexy hire.
Yeah.
I'd have to look up what his name is.
The Mean Green.
Yeah, the Mean Green.
North Texas.
Even though they're the Mean Green, but they have some sort of bird. They have some sort of eagle or hawk on their helmet.
Fun fact, that was the team that I coached in the NCAA football video game. I picked North Texas, and I made them really good because they sucked, and I wanted to take a team from being really bad to really good.
Can I ask a question?
Ask away.
Did the people need to know that?
Need to? No, but he did say fun fact.
I coached them in a video game. Is that what this has come to now? That's what we're doing?
Yeah.
That is what we're doing.
I made them a 10-win team, baby.
Was that a humble brag? Video game humble brag? Oh, my God.
They were the worst team in the game.
Oh, my God.
Now, so Seth...
Luttrell.
He's the guy. And do you know where he got his coach? One of the hottest young prospects...
I've heard his name.
...in all of college football. He came from a football powerhouse where he cut his teeth.
Probably Kansas.
Kansas.
He did?
Yep. 2002 to 2000. He was a graduate assistant. So he was in on the ground floor cutting his teeth. Just suckling at the power teat that is Kansas football.
Well, he knows how to beat Rutgers.
People really like him. People think that
they went in and beat
that he could be a star.
They beat Arkansas. What was the final score of that game?
I don't know, but they beat him. I mean, they had
44-17.
Yeah, they kicked their ass.
North Texas.
I don't even know what league that is.
I don't either. Anyway. they pulled off a great play, and they pulled off a fake fair catch.
Yeah.
And it was really cool how they did it. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have been talking about it, so they've gone through and kind of dissected, talked to the coaches about how they did it. And it's not as simple as just the guy like duping the defenders.
So if you didn't see it, what happened was they kicked the ball, and he was on what, maybe the 15-ish, somewhere in there. It was deep in his own territory. And he just caught the ball and then stood there. And everyone milled around. Everyone assumed that he had fair caught the ball. And then after, I don't know, a couple seconds, he just started running. And the damn thing worked. He took it to the house.
So the returner's name is Keegan Brewer. And he's got to have balls of steel. Because if it doesn't work, he's getting lit up.
Yeah.
So here's what happened. So they said that they started practicing that play at the start of camp. And it's quite intricate. So the first key is it's mainly done on punts that you think are going to be headed inside the 10-yard line.
Yeah.
Because most teams, if they see, even if a return man is there inside the 10, most teams peel off and assume that it won't be returned.
Yeah, because there's a notion in college football, and real football in general, that you plant your heels on the 10. And if it goes over your head, you either let it go, or if you are going to catch it, you are going to fair catch it. No one returns punts inside the 10. You just don't do it.
So that's the first key, and they got that situation against Arkansas on Saturday. The second key is the officials can't be fooled either. Somebody else tried to pull this off, but they blew the whistle because they fooled the officials too, and then that of course cost them. But the North Texas coaches said they did. You know, the coaches always meet with the officials ahead of a game,
yeah,
and they did warn the officials ahead of time. And they said, hey, be aware that we are going to try this, and just please watch closely and try not to, you know, be duped by it as well. Make sure that a guy calls a fair catch before you blow the whistle. So they were alerted. The third key is, and I thought this was interesting, and this could be where they come in and kind of look at this rule, but the returner, he did move his hands. Like, he's maneuvering toward the ball. And he sort of did, he almost kind of did like jazz hands a little bit. You know, jazz hands, yeah, where you put the hands out in front of your eyes.
I think we all know jazz hands, all right? We're skilled in the area of jazz hands here. We got that part covered.
So he didn't move his hand above his helmet to signal for a fair catch, but he did, he sort of blurred that line a little bit.
Because it's a penalty, by the way, if you call a fair catch and then you take off running, that is a penalty.
Yeah, you can't do that.
No.
And so I guess you should probably know, too, that if you haven't read through the NCAA rule book, the rule states, so in order to actually signal for a fair catch correctly, you have to throw one hand clearly over the helmet and wave it multiple times.
Oh, that's really?
So you can do a lot of stuff with your hands. And if it's not up over your helmet, one hand waved multiple times, it is not a fair catch.
See, and they don't really subscribe to that, because I see lots of guys just literally do like a one, mm-hmm, like a rainbow, right?
Yep.
Do like a reading rainbow sort of thing, and
yep,
it really anything over your head,
they let them get away with
you're
it.
You're gonna be fine.
So I don't know. Maybe they make the play illegal because coaches are probably just gonna start telling guys they'd rather have a 15-yard penalty over a touchdown. So light him up. If you're not sure, light him up. Because what they said with this was,
and it could have been bad,
the Brewer kid who caught the ball, what he said after the fact was, the guy standing right in front of him, number 31 for Arkansas, was literally right in front of him. You know how they kind of barrel down and then they stop because they think he fair caught it, so he can't hit him, so he stops.
Yep.
And then he looks at Brewer and says, why didn't they blow the whistle? And Brewer was just kind of like, yeah, I don't know, man. And he just started walking away from him. And then Brewer sprints and he goes 90 yards.
Yeah, he caught it on 10, 11 yard line ish, somewhere around there.
So the other things that are involved here is, Brewer has to have some balls and some buy-in, because if he catches, if like the other team catches on or they see that he didn't call a fair catch, he is
31 there can really break him in half.
Absolutely. And he's not a big guy either. By the way, I think the return man too, Brewer, he started at Kansas.
Did
he's a transfer.
Clearly,
all the good ones leave.
Look, the influence that Kansas has, it's unbelievable.
He transferred to North Texas?
Yeah, he did. Mm. Yeah, he couldn't hack it at Kansas. Low-level bro, that Brewer.
The article I read, I think it was the Switzer kid from North Carolina that was playing with Dallas and then I think he ended up in Oakland. They said that he did this a couple times in his college career, but neither one of them went for a touchdown, so it wasn't like a big deal. It didn't get highlighted.
He was one that fooled the officials. and they blew the whistle.
Yeah, on the Switzer one.
So the fourth key is that the coverage guys have to kind of jam the Arkansas players at the line to make sure that they have a harder time seeing if he called a fair catch.
Yeah, you can't have the guys down there in his face on a free run.
So that also slows them down a bit in case anyone catches on, and then they're full steam ahead at the dead man catching the ball. And then the last key is after the punt, the return man, he sort of has to just stand there and wait as if he did call a fair catch. And so kind of knowing how long to wait before taking off, he said was a kind of an interesting key too, because a lot of the North Texas players that were on the return team, they run towards the sideline as if a fair catch was called. They're all in on it. So they kind of pretend, hey, we're going to head over to the sideline. But
and then once he starts running, then everyone else starts blocking and you end up with a caravan.
That's right.
Down the sideline. I counted it. It looks like he got about a four Mississippi count that he waits.
He
after
just waits and
ball.
Everybody's just kind of standing around.
But it is really good because I hadn't really noticed that before. Now I'm watching the play again. Yeah, everyone else on the team does kind of do this half-hearted jog towards the sideline like it's over.
You want to know another thing that's really good? And the North Texas coach said this after the fact too. He said, you know, the thing that you got to do on that play too is every single person on our sideline, particularly everyone who's about to go out and play offense, has to know what's going on too, because they could think it's a fair catch and they could start walking on the field and that's a penalty.
Wouldn't that be something? Some dumbass offensive lineman comes jogging out on the field and gets in the way.
So they had it. So all of that we just talked about, all of that worked in unison and they pulled it off and he went 90 yards for a fake fair catch touchdown. It was pretty sweet, dude.
And you pull it out in the biggest game of the year, right? I mean, you got nothing to lose. You're taking a shot at the mighty SEC. And who would have known that North Texas would have ended up blowing out freaking Arkansas of the SEC?
And they also said that all the Arkansas players and a lot of their staff were mostly all on the field on the play, because you can't really see that on the other sideline in the clip.
Yeah.
But they were all on the field because they thought it was a fair catch. And some are saying that they could have just got, if it hadn't worked and the guy got tackled right away or something, or somebody caught on, that they would still penalize Arkansas
for
being on the field, because they were all out. Everybody in the whole freaking game was fooled.
It's all fun and games
until
someone on the kicking team realizes what's going on and just gets a 40-yard head of steam and just buries that poor kid.
I know. And then I think the next time he caught a punt, I think they made a play to try to kind of send him a message.
Well, I did see that there are some people are saying that this needs to be a rule in college football, that they want to outlaw this.
And I don't see why they wouldn't. Do you? I mean, it's a little,
I mean, I guess it doesn't happen that often, but
it probably
could start happening a lot now.
Well, like I said, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it for you to pull it off. It's a hard play to pull off. And now that everybody has seen that it's been done, they're probably less likely to fall for it.
Yeah, you see these things. Who is it? Kansas tried to do this. Remember, they hit a guy in the end zone. The end zones were all blue.
Yeah, he laid down.
And Kansas had all blues, and they laid it down.
That's the kind of innovation you get.
I think it went for 15 yards.
At the University of Kansas.
Yes. It. You know, you get some of these that happen. You try to do the old quarterback jogging off the field, and they'll direct snap it to a running back.
But if it didn't work,
you look like an ass.
It would have been bad. It would have been bad. And that's probably what they're going to do, is they're going to use the umbrella of player safety on that and change the rule.
Well, and someone said, too, that you could easily do this. Better You Today text line. You could do it like an offsides penalty in hockey where the ref just puts his hand up, right? Like once the fair catch is called, then the ref, you know, signals it somehow. He puts his hand up or whatever to let everyone know that it's been. So in hockey, like when there's an offsides, the ref will raise his hand and let the person and let everyone else know that there's a player offsides, like a delay or a delayed penalty in hockey.
Wait, but he wouldn't blow the whistle?
No.
So like his hand would be up.
So in hockey, there's two things. Like in offsides, you can have a player that's offsides, but the puck hasn't gone in yet to make it offsides. Or on a delayed penalty, the referee will just, he puts his arm in the air and it lets everyone know that there is a stoppage coming. And it's kind of a signal. Right. So you can
the
even
stoppage doesn't happen until the team that was penalized touches the puck.
Yeah. So you could have something like that where once the fair catch is called, the referee has his arms up and lets everyone know, hey, this play is dead as soon as he catches.
They do the exact same thing in soccer. They call it the advantage. Yeah. When the team that commits the foul doesn't have the ball and it's a scoring opportunity, the ref just pulls both his hands out and says, go. It's an advantage. There'll be a card or a foul after the play.
That makes sense.
Or just let the poor kid get lit up unless, you know, if no one falls for it. Buyer beware.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to let that fly.
Probably not.
I wouldn't think so.
But it was a hell of a play.
Football these days.
One of the best plays you'll see in college football ever.
Yeah, pretty interesting. All right, coming up next, NFL Stat Nerd segment, 417 on the Fan.
Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, tomorrow at this time, we are going to be interviewing Kirby Bradley. He is the producer of the 30 for 30 on Junior Seau. And let me tell you something. I watched that today.
Did you?
Get your Kleenex.
One of those, huh?
Dude, it is... It's really, really good.
Does his life get really dark at the end?
Yes. Oh, very dark. Yeah. And they go through it all. And I would say this, you know, it's one of those, again, those 30 for 30, sometimes when you're in sports,
sure,
you already know the details of the story, right? And so you see these 30 for 30s, like the one they did on Nancy Kerrigan and what's her name?
Tanya
Harding. And you go, yeah, well, there was nothing new in there. It's like no new perspective. It was just the story, right? Seau one is the exact same, but it is so good because if you have been in a coma or you've been living under a rock and you are not up to speed on the CTE thing and how the NFL has handled it and what it does to people, watch this. It's an hour and a half start to finish, and it ramps up. Believe me, it ramps up towards the end. It gets very, very sad.
Very
candid interviews with his family and his girlfriend and his ex-wife. And I tell you what, man, you want to see in a nutshell, just take an hour and a half, you want to see in a nutshell
what that can do,
what it does, and how the NFL has reacted to it and where we're at on it. Watch the Junior Seau 30 for 30, and it premieres, I think, tomorrow night on ESPN+, but they shot it to us early in preparation for this interview. It's really good, and that guy's going to be on tomorrow at this time.
I'll watch that because I honestly don't know a lot of the details. I mean, I asked if it got dark. Obviously, he committed suicide, but I don't... You know, sometimes with those, you know, you hear that we didn't really know, we didn't show any signs, you know, so it sounds like this wasn't the case, that people saw that this was taking a decidedly darker turn.
What I think it shows, to kind of hook you in more, to hopefully tuning in tomorrow when this guy comes on, is I think they did a really good job of showing how it's not just, oh, I have CTE, now I am acting irrationally and I killed myself. It's, for example, Seau was in pain, and because he was in pain from football, you know, he'd be out or whatever, and women would be throwing themselves at him, and he doesn't want to cheat, and he was a great guy, Junior Seau, by all accounts. But what he wrote, and he kept journals, so they have his journal entries, what he wrote was, I know what I'm doing is wrong, I don't want to do this, and I did it over and over and over, cheating on his wife, and... He said it eased the pain. He goes, I was in pain and it eased the pain. And so then those are his choices, right? But guess what? Then comes divorce. So now not only do you still have your football pain, but you have that pain on top of the physical pain. And then you compound that pain by thinking about what that's done to your kids. Then you continue to play football. You have more injuries. You lose the Super Bowl. Remember, he was with the undefeated Patriots. And he said that loss hurt him more than anything else. In football, losing that Super Bowl, the David Tyree catch, then you retire, and not only all your previous problems, but now you retire, and the one thing that kept you together, which was football, your identity for 20 years is gone. And so that compounds into more drinking, more pills, and then you are less inclined now, or less...
able to control
to control your other problems and handle your other problems that are coming at you in life. And so, by the way, you have CTE, which leads to mood swings and violence and depression. And so I sat there going, man, first of all, I loved him. I thought he was amazing.
I remember you saying that you were a big Junior Seau guy.
Junior Seau was the man, and he was a great football player. But he was also a very cool guy off the field, and talk to anybody in San Diego. The guy is a legend down there. Mm-hmm. But he was a warrior, right? Like Junior Seau was the definition of a warrior.
Yeah, tough guy.
And this guy had no defense for what happened to him. And they chronicle it so vividly, particularly through the eyes of his family, and his kids are on there being interviewed, and his girlfriend when she found him. And I tell you what, man, it is potent.
And he shot himself, right?
He did. He shot himself in the chest.
In the chest.
To save his, his brain could be studied. Anyway, we'll interview Kirby Bradley tomorrow at 4:15.
Also, too, kind of along those same lines, but from a different perspective, if you go to SI.com today, and I don't think it's the head story anymore, but it's one of them. If you scroll down a little bit, you'll see it. Speaking of San Diego, you remember Gary Plummer, right? Played all those years, middle linebacker with the 49ers, Chargers. There's a really interesting article on Gary Plummer who talks about he thinks he's had thousands of concussions, right? And retired because of them, played 15 years in the NFL. And that article is about how he has tried to combat the CTE stuff. And he, you know, through diet and meditation and all these different things. Mm. And he believes that he has found a way to stem the tide and actually kind of improve his quality of life. And he says that for a while there, he talks about in the piece that he was really bad. And he thought he was going down the road, you know, that Seau and all these other guys have. And he says that he's feeling better. He's thinking better than he has in years, and that it's not perfect, but that he has really kind of battled this. And so it's kind of an interesting juxtaposition with that Seau piece. Is go take a look at it. It's an interesting read, a little bit of a lengthy piece, but it was really good on Gary Plummer. And I think the title of it was, Is It Possible to Reverse Dementia? Gary Plummer thinks so.
Yeah, that's interesting. There are tools. There is help. They're learning more. But you'll when you watch Seau, you will realize he was too proud. He just would not.
Did he seek help?
Yeah, he knew it. The thing is, he knew the whole time that he was being a poor father and doing the wrong thing and acting differently, and he knew it.
Couldn't stop it.
He would write about it, and he couldn't stop it. But yet, he was also so proud that he wouldn't let anybody else around him sort of help him.
It's funny that I've poked around this quite a bit. I don't. Think I have it. I hope not, but it's obviously something that anyone that played and that had concussions is a concern. I think everyone that played thinks about it. So the more I've kind of read into this, and I try to, you know, to poke around and read different articles and stuff, it's because there's going to be a lot of people that are going to hear what you just said and go down the knee jerk reaction of he did it to himself. You know, he could have stopped. You know, all the behavior, right? He's the one that was cheating all this. And you read a lot about people that have this CTE, and that you really do. It is it's an impulse control. You can't, that's like telling an alcoholic not to drink, right? It's like, hey, why don't you stop drinking, or insomniac? Hey, just go to sleep. It affects that part of the brain where the impulse control and decision-making, and you're just not you. And you hear that time and time again. I've read that where you're aware of what's happening and yet you're powerless to stop it. And I think a lot of people that hear that without understanding what it does and what that disease is, they just go to this knee jerk reaction of, well, he's just an athlete that wanted to do what he wanted to do. And, you know, he could have stopped it if he wanted to. And I'm here to tell you, there's way more to that than just saying, stop this.
If you have that opinion, watch the 30 for 30 Seau, because that will help in that regard. Anyway, it's a good bit. We'll do that guy. We're not going to do him.
Whoa,
we're going to interview him.
Is he aware that we're going to do him?
We're going to interview him. His name's Kirby Bradley.
Is he in studio? And what role do I have? I'm uncomfortable by this.
He may not want to do him, but...
What?
Can you do someone over the phone?
Probably you can. You can, but I think you have to dial an 800 number for that. I think there's a credit card involved.
Well...
Do those still exist?
I'll give him my number. Credit cards? Yeah. They're around.
I think you still find those from time to time.
Okay. So that blows up our NFL stat nerd segment, which will be coming up later. We got to move on to in the news. We have either the most Portland or least Portland thing ever. So you get to decide this.
Okay.
And the hunt for Swan is on. You seen this?
I have seen this.
Poor little Swan.
Yeah, this gave me a little bit of a chuckle.
Oh, we're laughing now.
A little bit.
It's a missing kitten, Jason. Have a heart. Here's Mike.
Primetime with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, it's 4:36 here on 1080 The Fan. Coming up, we will dig into the NFL a little bit. We have some week two leftovers, like what really went on with Josh Gordon. And we've yet to talk about your Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yes.
Your former team.
The undefeated and clearly feeling my influence, Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
No question.
And we've got more Patriot kerfuffles.
Yeah. Are you talking about the book on Bill Belichick?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's two things in there that were interesting, and we will get to those. One is that the Belichick-Brady relationship could work with pretty much any of the top 15 quarterbacks.
Yeah, apparently it's not a big deal.
According to the Patriots.
Tom's non-essential personnel. And apparently Tom Brady hates Bill Belichick.
And we'll also get hiring advice from Urban Meyer via that new book by Ian O'Connor.
We didn't even get to talk about his stupid statement and, like, what was the Tom Rinaldi that did that piece? Why does Urban Meyer continue
to talk?
Did
you watch that?
I did.
You watched the
interview? It's painful.
He's the worst.
He is such an awful, awful human being.
He really is.
And
he's the worst type of awful, too.
He is, because he's awful that tries to disguise himself as the good guy.
He probably thinks he is.
And there is a great one in there where Tom Rinaldi asked him about kind of the, because Urban Meyer talks about the core value of the program.
Oh, yes.
Treating women with respect.
Core value, winning.
And Rinaldi asked him, where was the respect for Courtney Smith? 8 to 9 seconds of Urban Meyer just staring into the camera silently, followed by, that's a good question. He's the worst kind of sleaze, and he needs to go away. But he'll be back this week, and Ohio State fans will love him, and everyone else will hate
him. Well, clearly they don't need him. They're undefeated without him.
Boy, they that was a close game against TCU, and then in the fourth quarter, Ohio State showed you the difference between a top four team and TCU is a top 15, top 10 team in the country, and you saw in the fourth quarter the difference between top four and top 15.
All right, September 19th, I believe now.
You are correct.
September 19th, yeah, 2018.
Rolling along.
Time for In the News, your noted newsman here, news contributor Jason Skanek sitting right over there. That's him. I'm looking right at him.
Yeah, hi.
Now, either the most Portland or least Portland story ever. E-scooters are being thrown off bridges. Most Portland or least Portland?
That's the most Portland story. We're just picking these things up and now just hucking them.
Now, see, I say least Portland because it could mean that, well, like, you would think Portland would embrace the e-scooter.
Well, there are
going
to be.
But there's a backlash against the e-scooter.
Exactly, which is why it's the most Portland thing ever, because yes, they embrace it and that people are loving it, but you know, anything that is embraced in Portland, there will be a backlash against. No matter what it is, no matter how good it could be, there will be a protest and a backlash against it.
What if it's puppies?
I don't care.
They're just going to start throwing puppies
Someone
over?
Someone will still be angry about it.
So
and apparently now we pick them up and we huck them off the Hawthorne.
Here's what's going on. Yes, it's being documented on Instagram. Bird Hunting PDX has an account that's shown 39 instances of e-scooters being destroyed since July 27th. And by the way, those things are, I say being destroyed, they're really not destroyed if you watch the videos.
These floats?
Those things are pretty durable.
So if you
like, they're throwing them off of, like, balconies and stuff.
Yeah.
And they land intact.
Are you all right?
Well, I'm not all right, but they are.
Yeah. All right.
So
don't you have to pay for it if you throw that thing off?
Well, here's what they said. Okay, so you know that that's just a pilot program, right? Like, that's just a trial.
Yes.
So the transportation board or whomever rolled those out, and they are...
I see them quite a bit.
They're pretty popular, but they're trying to figure out... They're just studying to see if they're safe enough.
Yeah.
So hopefully no one dies.
Well, like I said, I saw a bro try to bunny hop a curb and just take a header, and it was hilarious.
And they're trying to see if they'll work. Well, the guy was the guy from the Bureau of Transportation or whatever was interviewed in the story that I was reading, and he said, "Look, we just want to find out if they're safe. Vandalism, bang." In other words, he kind of said, "We're not going to do anything about it."
Well, doesn't that kind of come with the territory? I feel like if you work at a store, right, you build in the cost of shoplifting. Like if you own a department store or a grocery store, you accept that shoplifting is the cost of doing business. I kind of feel like the transportation department understands that there's going to be some scooters that are stolen, a couple others that are thrown off some balconies, or maybe some that end up in the Willamette.
I say leave e-scooters alone, but whatever. This is a bit. This is a thing. I don't know why.
Yeah, but
apparently it's a trend, too, to like just place them in really hard-to-get places because you're supposed to take a picture of where you left it, so that when someone is looking, it pops up the ones in the area. So people are leaving them like in trees, and you take the picture and the app goes, thanks for the picture. And then the next person who comes along has to find it in the tree.
Really? It's just, I'm amazed that people that have the energy to do this sort of thing.
I'm so with you on that.
Look, I get it's kind of funny to put it up in the tree, but I'm assuming those things aren't super light. So you got to pack that thing, you got to climb a tree, you got to get it up in the tree. Seems like a lot of effort just to take a photo on the gram and throw it up there and be like, yeah, let's put my e-scooter in the tree.
Good text here from the Better You Today text line. It's most Portland story because they exist, and most Portland story because people are trying to destroy them. Good point.
Yeah. Welcome to Portland.
So this is quite Portland, and it is the story from over there just across the river on the east side, Pixie Project, which is a it's an animal shelter.
Yeah, it's like an animal adoption.
That's where we got Ned.
Is that where you got Ned?
Yeah, we got the Nedster from
Old Ned.
Pixie Project.
Rest in peace.
And here's another fun fact. We are cat sitting right now.
What?
Yeah. So not only are we cat sitting, but we got Ned from Pixie Project, which means I am an expert on this next story.
That's why you called me. I am expert. Rob is dialed in.
Yeah, that cat sucks, by the way.
Well, maybe it can go missing like old Swanee here.
God. Anyway, there's the shirtless backpack guy who, you know, those guys are a dime a dozen down there.
Yeah.
He rolls into Pixie Project. They're in the back doing something. The employees aren't out front, and they do have cats in there.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be closed. Like, someone didn't lock the door, but it wasn't open for business.
Well, I've gone in there before, and no one's been at the front. There are times when you're just waiting for someone to come up front. And so he was perusing around. They have little toys and stuff that you can buy, and then they have a couple cages where there's a bunch of cats sitting in there. Well, he goes in and steals a black kitten, and he just walks right out.
Yeah, grabbed it and left, like 3 months old.
So they arrested him, but apparently he sold the kitten to someone downtown. Forgive me for laughing.
And so now this is like a major, we've got an APB out, all points alert.
For Swan,
the missing black kitten.
Yeah.
They unleashed Mike Brenner. KGW sent the great Mike Brenner, who I love.
Was he down there?
He had to go down there and cover this story. This was the most pressing issue.
Hey, gotta find the cat.
For Mike Brenner, was that we're looking for a kitten that was sold to someone and is probably loving and caring for it right now.
Well, Lord knows what happened to that poor cat. Down there.
You would hope that he sold it to someone, and then look, if I saw like some shirtless...
Oh, I'm sure it was just some cute little girl walking down the street with her mom. Hey, you want to buy a kitty from a drugged up homeless guy? Or,
well, he was a
shirt. I mean, come on.
He was a shirtless.
Yeah,
sure,
camper. We'll take it. Looks great.
Well, here's the thing. If someone like that did have a cat and he was trying to sell it for $20, I would buy it from him just to get the cat away from him.
Oh,
do you ever think of that?
No, I've never thought of that. I do see dogs with like the guys that are
sitting on the street. Yeah, dogs and homeless, they go hand in hand.
I don't like that, and it's terrible of me, but I always feel way more sympathy for the dog than the human.
Isaac Robb, team dog.
I am team dog.
I think a lot of people do, and that's why they get the dog, is that people feel sympathy for the dog, and then they give you money.
I want to give the money to the dog, not the guy.
What you need to do is get some doggy treats then, and just give them doggy treats. Get some dog food. Then, you know,
yeah.
You're not going to do that.
Anyway, what do you think happened to Swan?
I'm guessing that Swan was sold and Swan's fine. Like, he sold the cat.
I don't think Swan's fine. I think Swan is in peril, which is why Mike Brenner is down there.
This was the most Portland story ever. When I was scanning KGW.com and I saw, because when I see Mike Brenner on the news, I'm like, okay.
He gets the big stories.
This is a major story. And then when I read the story and saw the clip, I'm like, really? Mike Brenner was dispatched to cover the theft of a swan kitten? I mean, it just seems a bit overkill. KGW, slow news day.
what if Swan ends up at a food cart? You know?
Like having some lunch? All right.
No, he's not Toonses.
Maybe he just
being,
I don't know,
served.
That's what cats do. Cats roam around, right?
I gotta tell you, I hate cats. This
Why
cat
are
that
you
we're
cat sitting.
My wife agreed to cat sit. It's for my niece.
Well, like,
and she's gone for 2 weeks, and this stupid cat, I haven't seen that cat but 3 times.
Well, that's kind of my point.
The cat just hides.
Why do you care about, like, dog sitting is a labor-intensive thing. Cat sitting, don't you just ignore it and then occasionally put down some food?
Yeah, that's the advantage of the cat.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of want to connect with the cat.
Oh.
But it won't let me.
See, I'm
that's why cats suck.
I'm going to go a step further and say that if I had to house sit an animal, I'd rather house sit the cat than the dog.
No question.
Yeah.
Unless it was a really cool old dog. Yeah, I love old dogs.
Yeah, that you wanted to like hang out with.
They just lay around. And
I've got two dogs. I don't need to connect with another dog, nor do I want to take care of another one. So give me the cat.
Cats are almost always really, really wary of strangers.
Oh.
So if you're not the owner, they're gonna be hiding or just avoiding you at all costs until you get comfortable. But by that point, you're gonna
she's kind of warmed up
back
to my wife a little bit. But then so the cat jumps onto the bed, we're laying there, not doing it, and she starts.
The cat was blocking you, huh? You were trying to get frisky, and the cat was having Whiskers was having nothing to do with it.
Dude, I was so close. So the cat jumps on there and she starts petting the cat and she's like, and we're like, oh wow, this is a breakthrough. You know, the cat's actually alive still and it's here and okay. And then the cat flips and scratches her and runs out of the room. It's like, what the? She's like, what did I do?
No one knows.
I'm like, you didn't do anything, babe. It's just a cat.
It's a cat. No one should have a cat, especially a man. You find yourself a man that owns a cat, that's no bueno. That's right out.
Well, hopefully Swan is not addicted to meth by now, but...
Or clinging to an e-scooter in the river right now.
Maybe too late.
No.
Let's find Swan.
Rest in peace, maybe.
Yes.
Swan the kitten.
Okay, what do you do if you find 30 brown... Is it recluse? Brown recluse? Brown recluse.
I think it's recluse.
If you... What's plural? So brown recluses?
I think it's just recluse.
That's plural?
I think it's like deer. Okay. It's a recluse spider or recluse spiders.
Okay. Oh, gotcha. Okay, so what do you do if you find 30 brown recluse in your new home?
Fear pee?
Whoa.
Brock Lesnar defense?
That story coming up next on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, the Hot 5 to 5 in mere moments. But we're wrapping up the news here. A woman in Paulding County, Georgia, says dozens of venomous brown recluse spiders have invaded her home.
And by the way, that's one of the more poisonous spiders. You can lose limbs, and if you're not careful, you can lose your life.
And she doesn't know how to get rid of them.
Well, I say start by burning the house down and getting the hell out of there. Collecting the insurance money.
She moved into her new house and immediately after found 30 of them. Now, they're very distinctive. They have that violin-shaped hot body.
Oh, you know what? I don't know if I could correctly identify one.
I thought the Black Widow had that.
That's got the hourglass, the red hourglass.
Oh, the hourglass, okay.
Well, it's like the violin shape is like a marking on the recluse.
Now I'm looking this up. Because I need to know what to look for in case they invade my house. Because I've had some huge freaking spiders lately around my place, and it's kind of freaking me out.
Pretty distinctive. You can tell. But here's the thing. I didn't know about the brown recluse. They are a shy animal. And while their venom is quite toxic, and symptoms can vary from none to very severe, they generally just hide. Like, they rarely bite.
Really?
Yeah, they're very rare. Nobody ever sees them. Hence the recluse.
You know what? This is going to be one of those probably I'm a dumbass.
You never thought about that.
Never thought about that once. Never figured out that that's why it could possibly be called that.
Yeah, this says brown recluse spiders are difficult to eradicate, largely because of their secretive habits. Virtually any dark, undisturbed area can serve as a harborage, and many such places occur within buildings. Because of this and the potential health threat, treatment is best performed by professionals. Yeah, thanks, tips.
I still kind of like the burning the house down idea. 30 of them?
I know.
And how did this lady find 30 of them?
Well, if there's 30, I don't know. It doesn't say, but if there are 30, don't you suspect that there are more?
One would think.
This is like that Idaho story when the family moved in and they heard something in their walls and they opened the walls and there was a billion snakes in there.
Exactly. Like you don't just stop counting at 30 and be like, well, I guess there's only 30 spiders. Wrong. And by the way, you can never trust that house again, ever. I don't care if you brought in the world's greatest spider hunter and he told you that that house was eradicated of all of them. You could never, ever fully trust what that house has going on again, which is the only thing you can do is move or burn it to the ground.
When you find like one or two spiders in a day, the next week you're looking at every corner of the walls like, is there another? Is there another?
Is anyone else besides me noticing that?
Do you really do that?
Yes.
You guys are kind of spider weens, though.
I hate spiders.
Well, I have to because my kids freak out about it, and then I have to go kill them.
So does my wife.
But I have noticed more and more spiders, and the ones that are showing up are not normal little spiders. These suckers are just big and fat, and they're like, I don't know, like the size of silver dollars.
Oh, I've seen those. You know those turn into alligators?
Yeah. I heard sewer cougars. They're coming up from a sink.
Well, I don't know what ended up happening with this woman, but she found 30 of them.
I had a guy that I played.
All up in there.
Speaking of the brown recluse spider, I knew a guy. His name was Devon. I'm trying to remember what his last name was, but he played with me in Tampa Bay, and he was over in NFL Europe, and he won a bunch of money from NFL Europe because he was bitten by a brown recluse spider in the leg.
Really?
Yeah, and he went and told the team about it, and they kind of shrugged it off, and then he got on an airplane to fly with them to go wherever they were going to play. They had to make an emergency landing.
Whoa.
And he almost had to have his leg amputated.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it ate like a big hole in his leg. So he had like a big divot like in the middle of his leg where it bit him, and he sued and won a bunch of money. Lucky bastard.
So they misdiagnosed the fact that it was a recluse?
No, they knew the spider. Like, I guess he found...
Oh, they were just like, you'll be
fine.
Yeah,
they're like, it wasn't a big deal. They tried to tell him he was fine and he could fly. Got on the airplane and his leg started to swell up.
Whoa.
Like, started to balloon. And so they had to land it somewhere in Europe, wherever they were going. And they took him to the hospital. And I guess they almost had to amputate his leg. And he has like a... Like I said, he has like a big divot, like someone took a golf ball and drilled it into his leg because of it.
Isn't it crazy something that small can cause that?
Yeah. But I actually, in the grand scheme of things, though, he didn't lose his leg. Yeah, it was painful and scary, but the dude got serious coin. He got a couple hundred G's out of it. And I don't know about you, but I'll take a divot in my leg, a little spider bite for a couple hundred G's. Cool story, scar.
Yeah, I think I'd probably do that. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're not...
Yeah, he's not dead. Didn't lose the leg.
Yeah.
He's just scared for a little bit.
A scar. It probably hurts, but...
Yeah, yeah.
How long?
Although he said he had like a fever, so I think he was kind of out of it.
Call the Blazers. Put some biofreeze on that.
Squeeze some of that in there. Oh, it'll be fine.
All right. That is in the news for September 19th, 2018. Coming up next, it is time for the Hot 5 at 5. Yes, the Blazers and Damian Lillard back in the news today. We have injury updates for Ducks and Beavers. And we'll check in on the pennant chases tonight. It's a 4:58 on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.